The Large Nerdron Collider podcast is a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome to the Large Nerdron Collider, the podcast that's all about the geeky things happening in the world around us and how very excited we are about them. I'm Ariel Kasten, and with me, as always, is the dulcetly toned Jonathan Strickland.
Hello, Ariel. Well, hello, Ariel. It feels just like we did this just a moment ago. Because we did. Yeah, so here's a little peek behind the curtain, y'all. Sometimes when you're recording, you look over and you notice that in the levels on your screen, that one of the two people talking, in this case me, starts to hit little red colors, which are bad because it means that I'm blowing out the mic. So we had to scrap 7 minutes and 11 seconds of content and start all over again.
And we had barely even gotten into anything we wanted to talk about. But listen, Jonathan, don't be too hard on yourself. It's not your fault if you go to 11.
That's true. But I am now ready to ask you a question. Bet you can't guess what it is. All right, Ariel, because one of our topics we're going to talk about today is about a certain famous musician, someone who's had a very long career and even received a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame in 2018, we're going to have this question be, do you have any favorite Weird Al Yankovic songs?
I do. Harvey the Wonder Hamster.
Which is a 30-second song about a hamster.
Listen, you didn't give me a length specification, sir. It's an amazing song. I sing it to my cat, Harvey. Sometimes I change it to Harvey the Wonder Kitty, but usually I call him Harvey the Wonder Hamster anyhow. You know, he had Harvey the Wonder Hamster on his old TV show. That's not what I named my cat after. I named my cat after Farscape. I think you all know that, but I like it. But okay, if that one doesn't count, then let's see. If you go back to like when I was first introduced to Weird Al, I think it was Don't Go Making Phony Calls. Because I like Don't Go Chasing Waterfalls by TLC. But like, it's hard because all of those songs I liked because I was young and impressionable. And then he made a parody of it. And I also like comedy. So then I liked that, you know, like Pretty Fly for a Rabbi and Amish Paradise. Oh, I really liked Amish Paradise. Of his more modern stuff, I like Word Crimes because it's, I like that fast wordplay. It's almost nerdcore. It's like nerd polka core. But really, my favorite of all Weird Al are his polka mashups.
Mm-hmm. Who would have thunk that the person who does mashups loves polka mashups?
I mean, I do them in every aspect of my life. I do them in this podcast, my band, like our bread and butter is mashing up songs. The last time we recorded this, I said I didn't have a favorite. And then I said my favorite was like Polka Your Eyes Out because it was like Cradle of Love and Enter Sandman and Dr. Feelgood and Ice Ice Baby. But then I looked through all of his other polka mashups and I love all of those too. So it's kind of like, it's like picking a favorite child.
Yeah.
And I've rattled on now. I've cheated at this question because I've named 52 of his songs that I like, and I could just keep going until I've named his almost entire catalog. I didn't even touch like his originals.
Yeah, that's
what
fine.
About you, Jonathan?
I'm going to be touching his originals, which is why he has a restraining order against me.
Yeah, you are. Wait, what?
Yeah. So yeah, I like his parodies, but the problem I have with parodies in general, it's nothing to do with his parodies, which I think are brilliant. For one thing, he's really good at recreating the sound that made the original song special. He's really good at that. The problem I have with parodies is that often you can have a song that just falls out of favor to the point where the parody, like you forget that it's even a parody of a song because the song that it's parodying isn't really in the zeitgeist anymore. And I like the originals because they are more evergreen. And I even told you this before we started recording this is that, you know, when I first heard the song Yoda, I didn't even realize it was a parody because I was a geeky kid, hadn't even heard of the Kinks, didn't know there was a song called Lola. which is awesome. But then I finally put two and two together when I did hear Lola. I went, oh, this is what Yoda is a parody of. Thank goodness I didn't make the mistake of saying, oh, Lola must be a parody of Yoda. But the more recent song that I think speaks to me on a deep level is called Skipper Dan. And it's a song about an actor who has dreams of being on the stage and was on the path to becoming something big in theater when, you know, opportunities dried up and he took a job as a guide, a skipper on the Jungle Cruise ride at Disneyland. And that's where he's stuck now. And it's a cheerful sounding song with kind of tragic story elements to it, because it's about someone whose dream is dying before his eyes. And I love that juxtaposition. And, you know, there are a lot of other artists out there who have created music in that same sort of feel. Like Jonathan Colton has done a lot of songs that you listen to it, and if you're not paying attention to the lyrics, you're like, this is a bopper. This is poppy. And then you listen to the lyrics, I'm like, whoa, this is dark. They Might Be Giants does it too. You know, there's a few different bands out there that are really good at it.
Only recently did I actually go and listen to what They Might Be Giants songs were about. And yeah, that, like, some of their albums are pretty darn depressing. It is funny. I'll share this. Paul and Storm is another geek band that we both like. And yeah, you say Skipper Dan, and my brain just automatically goes to The Ballad of Eddie Prager, which is a sea shanty with bad penny whistle about a urinal cake.
Yeah, not the same thing.
So I don't know why. Maybe it's just the oceanic title tie-ins.
And the two names. Like, yeah. you have well, a title and a name in the case of Skipper Dan. But so we're going to talk about Weird Al. In fact, we're going to do it right now because, Ariel, you found a story that I got to tell you, when I saw the headline, I had to check the date on that story to make sure it wasn't an April Fool's joke, because I was sure it wasn't true.
I had to do the same thing. I had to, and I had to check my sources. So Roku, along with
Funny or Die
and Tango, is making a biopic on Weird Al Yankovic, along with Weird Al Yankovic. Yankovic is working on this with them. He's writing it. And Daniel Radcliffe is playing Weird Al. And at first I was like, what? Weird Al's an actor. Why would they cast anybody else as him? But I guess if he needs to be young Weird Al is, you know, not old, but
he's
older than a kid. Yeah, that's not old.
But yeah, Daniel Radcliffe, if he's going to be playing like the Weird Al who first got his start getting his tapes played on the Dr. Demento radio show, you know, that makes more sense. But yeah, Daniel Radcliffe, it's such a wild choice, not a bad choice, mind you, because Daniel Radcliffe is, I think he's proven himself with a lot of really interesting role choices over the last 5 years that, in my mind, completely separate him from being Harry Potter. I know that everyone thinks of him that way because, of course, obviously he was central to that franchise for 8 movies. But, you know, having him play this, it feels so far out of field. And at the same time, I really want to see it.
I kind of agree. I kind of don't. So recently I watched Miracle Workers, which is a bit raunchy and there's a lot of base humor. So if that's not your thing, I'm not recommending it for you. But Daniel Radcliffe is one of the main characters in it. It's kind of commedia dell'arte in that it's the same actors playing similar characters across different scenarios. They're all different characters, but they all have a similar like MO. Mm-hmm. And in that he plays kind of like the nice guy. And Weird Al's a really nice guy from everything I know about him.
Yeah.
I don't know him personally. And Daniel Radcliffe can sing and he can dance and he's really good at comedy and he's really good at drama. So I think he's a great choice. His nose is not quite right.
what I think is, I love that that's what you bring up, but what I think is that the news article and Deadline about this obviously has things that are clearly being played up for laughs, like the idea of Weird Al having all these hot and heavy, like illicit love affairs and stuff that
maybe he did.
Maybe with nasal spray. And if you get that reference, It means you watched a 1980s era Weirdo Yankovic comedy special that I think me and maybe two other people have seen. But
Is it UHF?
No, it's before UHF. He did this goofy comedy special before UHF, and it was kind of a reason to group together a bunch of music videos of his songs. It was supposed to be a biopic of Weird Al, but it was a joke. Like it was inventing lots of stuff that supposedly happened, like him doing a Jimi Hendrix and lighting his accordion on fire on stage, that kind of thing. Very tongue in cheek. So I'm eager to see this. I'm a big Weird Al fan. He's done some amazing stuff. Not just his music, but you know, he's directed music videos of notable, and he's done tons of like collaborations. Like sometimes he shows up as a surprise collaborator in someone else's concert. It's just crazy. Like he came out for Weezer and played Africa, Toto's Africa with Weezer on stage one time and bonkers stuff like that. So,
I mean, he really is one of my favorite artists that I've never met and don't know.
I've never met him either. I've been to several of his shows, but I've never done like a meet and greet. And I'm fine with that. I'm like, the dude, like give him his space because I know I would be that annoying geeky fan if I were to ever actually chat with him. And I'm happy just being a fan. I'm good with that.
Yeah. I know I've been really lax for the people who actually check our website on updating it recently, but I will update it with the show notes for this episode because, you should read this Deadline article, even if you don't go to our website, because it really does read like an April 1st article. Even with the head of Roku and the head of Funny or Die being in on it.
Yeah. Yeah. So. To the point where, again, like I'm not 100% convinced this is a real thing. One other thing that I am 100% convinced of is that Microsoft has made a big move, and chances are, if you're a video game enthusiast, you know this news already. It has the company has announced that it is acquiring Activision Blizzard for more than $60 billion.
Yeah. My friends have been chatting about this today, and they're concerned about how Blizzard properties will play with Apple products once this finally goes through, which, you know, it's going to take a while.
Yeah, I mean, so Phil Spencer, who's he's the CEO of Microsoft Gaming, has said that they remain committed for Activision Blizzard titles to play on the platforms upon which it's known for. Like, it's a very loose, vague language, but the meaning seems to be, my interpretation of the meaning is that he's saying, okay, PlayStation owners, Mac owners, don't worry, we're not gonna tell Activision Blizzard to stop making stuff for your platforms. That's not going to happen. That seems to be the message, but it'll remain to be seen. Now, Activision Blizzard has been in the news a lot since the middle of 2021, as a lot of allegations made the light of day about a very toxic work culture, one that is plagued with lots of serious problems, including sexual harassment claims. And the company has been trying to clean up quite a bit since then, or at least that's been the messaging. So one takeaway I have for this is that it gives me hope that serious positive changes are on the way, because I'm always worried that a company that has kind of those deep issues, it's really hard for that company to change on its own. Like, it's hard for internal change to come if the foundation is rotten. And my hope is that Microsoft can help make those changes. Hopefully, everyone manages to keep their jobs, but they also end up in a more positive and supportive work environment.
It sounds like that is Microsoft's plan. The article on Polygon that we're using as reference, one of the many articles on it, quotes Microsoft as saying that they value studio culture and employee and inclusiveness and are going to try to improve all that. And again, in very vague terms.
Yeah, but that's great news. In the short term, I think it's going to be great news for gamers. Long term, obviously, consolidation is always kind of scary because you worry about stuff getting kind of all boiled down so it all feels and plays and looks the same, and you don't want that. But in the short term, if you're someone like who has Xbox Game Pass, you're going to see some crazy titles popping up in that. And short term for the employees could mean an improvement in their work conditions, which to me is the most important thing. But, you know, also, I mean, I understand how gamers can feel really stressed out about this. Ariel, I'm gonna call an audible.
Okay.
And that audible is, let's take our third news item for this segment and put it in the next segment because it kind of fits there anyway.
Cool.
Now let's take a break.
I'm actually happy you did that, Jonathan, because I'm going in my head. I don't know whether I want to segue into this using toxic workplaces or something that is good news, because it's kind of both. And that's that Real Steel, the 2011 film that is basically Rock'em Sock'em Robots with Wolverine in it. Well, it's not Wolverine. It's Hugh Jackman.
No, it's the
but
Music
whatever.
Man.
It's the Music Man. Yeah. Okay. So Hugh Jackman's in this 2011 movie about people who have build boxing robots, and he's kind of a delinquent dad, is apparently getting a Disney Plus show. The only reason I said toxic workplace is because the boxing robot scene is not
the most wholesome,
the most up and up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a surprisingly good movie.
Was it? Like I have yet to see it. It's not that I didn't want to see it. It's just one of those things that it's like literally one of those mini titles that kind of slipped past me and I never got a chance to really watch it. Not that I didn't like, it definitely wasn't going to be the kind of film that I was going to go seek out in the theaters when it came out, but it would have been the kind of thing I might watch on a evening on like a streaming service.
I would say that you should. Yeah. It's kind of like Rocky meets, I mean, literally Rock'em Sock'em Robots meets Over the Top.
Yeah. The way you were describing it, I was thinking like for the people who don't know what Over the Top is, do you care to kind of give a quick synopsis? Because it is crazy.
Yeah, it's Sylvester Stallone plays a delinquent dad and there's like arm wrestling.
Yes. He's a truck driver and a professional arm wrestler. And he's competing in an arm wrestling tournament. And he also has an estranged son with whom he's trying to reconnect. And that movie is equal parts terrible and awesome. And I love it. And it's terrible.
Then, I mean, I would definitely say you should watch Real Steel. I thought it was good. Mind you, I also enjoyed Van Helsing. But
your standards and my standards are different. That's all.
They are. But what I'll say is if you liked Over the Top, it's not quite as cheesy. It has like a better plot. It has, I feel, better acting.
See, that ruins everything. Does it have a point where the guy says, I like to turn my hat around because it's like a switch, like on a truck.
You know, I don't know. It has, I will say, it has been a while since I've watched Real Steel. I own it. Now I'm going to have to go back and watch it again. But I really am excited for the show. I quite enjoyed it. I didn't know what to expect. I expected it to be a dumb movie, but it was just a lot of fun.
Do you think it was, because you have seen it and I haven't, do you think there's enough juice there to support a series?
I mean, there's enough juice to support a whole bunch of robots.
Well, the other thing we wanted,
but yes, I do, but it'll be a little bit gritty, you know, like, It's robots punching the schnookers out of each other.
Yeah, I mean, like, what's the... I get that. The story is what's important, right?
It's like if Johnny Five were gritty.
Because if Cobra Kai were just a series about teenagers kicking the snot out of each other, it wouldn't be compelling. You wouldn't watch more than an episode of it. There's more going on in Cobra Kai than that. What I'm wondering is, what will be the underlying story that will fuel a Real Steel series, because otherwise it's just a fantasy version of Robot Wars.
I mean, I like Robot Wars. I'd watch a fantasy version of that. I mean, I think it'll be family. You can draw out family conflict in a million different ways.
Good,
I mean,
goodness knows, generation by generation, you can.
Ultimate
watching Kanto. Like,
yes. But even with Cobra Kai, which I love, and it's one of my goals to be on Cobra Kai. Like, I love it, but it's largely the same conflict every season with a few added or changed factors. You haven't watched Cobra Kai yet, have you?
And it almost sent me on another rabbit hole, but we have more things we have to talk about. So I'm not yes. going to do it, but I am going to do it to you after we stop recording.
You will have to. You will have to. But this really leads into another thing that Disney just unveiled to us, which is a new Moon Knight trailer. And that's going to be pretty dark, but they aren't putting it on Hulu. They're putting it on Disney Plus.
Yeah. What was your reaction to the trailer? What did you think? Did you like it? Not like it? Was it nothing?
It wasn't what I expected.
I get that. Yeah.
Yeah. So it focused. I thought it was really cool in that it didn't. It revealed, I think, just enough for the fans and just enough for if you don't know what Moon Knight is about to go, huh?
Mm-hmm.
I need to watch and figure out what's going on without revealing necessarily too much of the plot or too many of the cool things for people who are new, who coming in new to this, to the property. Mm-hmm. But I expected a lot more of the other aspects of the character to come into the trailer than did.
Yeah, for those who don't know, because, I mean, this is just part of the character has like a multiple personality disorder kind of thing. And in many ways, this trailer gave me flashbacks to Legion, another Marvel character also.
Which I quite like.
Yeah, and it's also a Marvel character who has numerous multiple personalities. But
in the comics, they change it up a little bit.
Yeah, no, they change quite a bit in Legion, the television series, versus Legion, the comic book character. Mm-hmm. But like who Legion's dad is. But the Moon Knight trailer, I thought, was very moody and effective. Mm-hmm. Oscar Isaac, I love him. I will forgive his accent. Cool.
I heard some people comparing it to Dick Van Dyke. I heard some people comparing it to Dick Van Dyke. Yeah. Which I love Dick Van Dyke. So,
but his accent in Mary Poppins is frequently a thing of ridicule. But we wanted to use this kind of to have a brief discussion at least about, because Moon Knight does look like it's going to be a little more intense. I mean, I don't know. It's kind of hard to see what Moon. So there is a sequence in the trailer where Moon Knight is pounding something with his fists.
It looks like a person.
It might be a person. If it's a person, that definitely raises up this question legitimately. If it's like a monster kind of thing, then this question ends up almost being moot. But the question is, do we think Disney Plus is testing out the possibility of more gritty, violent Marvel content? And could that potentially mean that we might see a return, not of specific characters, but of series that we got on Netflix that were far more violent and dark than anything we've seen in the Marvel movies? I mean, Daredevil and Jessica Jones and
Luke Cage
and like, you know, all the appearances of the Punisher. Mm-hmm. Very over the top violent. I don't think we're going to get anything close to that level with Moon Knight.
No.
But I do wonder if this means that we could see characters like the Punisher reemerge.
I think so. I don't have any insight on this. I will say, like, I follow the casting directors for Marvel stuff because I'm an actor. Of course I do. I don't have any insight on this. You know, they're all very tight-lipped. Even if I had insight, I wouldn't say.
Right.
But I would have to imagine so. Are we past the spoiler window for Hawkeye?
I think so.
Okay, so we already know that Kingpin from Daredevil was in Hawkeye. I hope that was enough of a spoiler warning for anybody who hasn't watched it.
I mean, all the promotional material had him. And then there's been tons of coverage since then with Vincent talking about it.
He was very excited about it and was not great at keeping his lips sealed to the point where Disney had to be like, no. But then, yes. and in Daredevil, he is super violent. In Hawkeye, he wasn't as violent, though the stuff surrounding him definitely was more violent than other aspects of the show.
He was far more damage resistant in Hawkeye than he was in Daredevil, however.
Yeah. More similar to like how he was in, although it wasn't an offer playing him in Spider-Man and the Multiverse. How he was portrayed in that cartoon movie. So I feel like This is definitely them trying to open the waters to bring back. I would love to see Daredevil and Luke Cage. I feel like to put it on Disney Plus, they would need to put in some parental, like some extra parental controls onto the system.
Yeah.
Because that's definitely stuff I would not want, like, my six-year-old stumbling across. I'm really surprised they aren't putting it on Hulu, because, like, Hitmonkey and MODOK and things like that are all on Hulu, which is still owned by Disney, but...
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe there's, like, some rights issues tied up with Netflix. I don't know. Like, maybe there was, like, an option or whatever, and until that expires, they can't really do anything with it. I am not aware of anything like that, but it's a possibility. It's more like I'm wondering if we'll see stuff along the same vein, and it may be a while before we see those characters get a series again, apart from like little appearances and other stuff. But I'm hopeful. I really liked the first season of Daredevil a lot. I liked second season less, but I still liked it. I really like Jessica Jones, but Jessica Jones, like Jessica Jones deals with stuff that's goes beyond just violence. I mean, there should be trigger warnings aplenty in Jessica Jones.
I feel like Jessica Jones, as much as I think they did a good job with the first season of it on Netflix, I think the character can certainly cross over into D plus stuff, no problem, especially looking at her later seasons. But I don't think that series fits Disney Plus. I don't think there's enough parental controls to make it fit that platform. You know, I liked Luke Cage. Again, all of these things were very much made for adults, and they were all very, very gritty. The one like Iron Fist, as much as I liked how season two ended, they don't need to
bring it back. Well, and see, the interesting thing to me as well is that the Netflix series, they went to a level of intensity that goes not just beyond Disney Plus, but well beyond anything you see in any of the films, right? Like the movies all take a pretty PG-13 approach, which makes sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're marketing these to be for everybody, not just adults. And so time and again, when you watch a Marvel film, the violence tends to be pretty downplayed. There's a lot of action. But if there's anything where someone like Hawkeye is shooting someone with an arrow and the arrow actually, you actually see the arrow hit that something, it's usually a CGI alien. Like, it's not a person.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, he hit people in the TV show.
Yes.
But there wasn't a lot of blood. It goes back to that, like that rating system of like what makes something PG versus PG-13.
Right.
Is it how much blood and guts you show? Or is it the act of the violence?
Yeah. It's, we could do a whole episode just about how bizarre and contradictory.
Have.
Yeah, we have talked about in the past about how the rating systems are messed up. Like they don't necessarily do a good job of protecting people if that's what they're meant to do. They also don't do a good job of really indicating what, you know, whether a film is going to be upsetting or not. Like, it's, there's a whole thing. And also the whole process of just submitting to get the rating is ridiculous.
Star Wars is pretty violent. Mandalorian's pretty violent. Home Alone is pretty violent.
I will say this. Although the Book of Boba Fett is not nearly violent enough.
I am still behind on it. It feels like it's trying to be three different. This segment is not supposed to be about Book of Boba Fett, but we can definitely bunny trail there. It feels like it's trying to be three different movies, and I like the documentary on Tusken Raider culture.
Yeah, like the fact that you get an episode, let's say it's 50 minutes long, you can be pretty sure that about 40 minutes of that 50 minutes is going to be set as a flashback to Tusken Raiders. And the other 10 minutes is a little bit of continuation of whatever the storyline is playing out in the quote unquote modern day of the show.
I mean, so the other part of it feels like good feathers, but like good Beskars.
Good feathers, not good fellas.
No, good feathers.
You went with the cartoon parody of Goodfellas. I mean, you're not wrong.
I'm not wrong.
Okay, well, we're going to wrap this up, but I definitely am curious to see if we're going to get any more gritty type of series on Disney Plus. Because I really feel like there are a lot of stories that Marvel would like to tell that they just can't tell in the format they've kind of found themselves locked into right now. I mean, we know they're supposed to be bringing Blade And Blade, if you don't go R with Blade, or at least flirt with it, what's the point?
I mean, I think they can, but Blade is also kind of
tangential.
You know, I would have said Moon Knight was tangential, since he's kind of a more disturbed Batman.
Well, yeah, and Batman already has got issues out the wazoo.
Yeah. But I am looking forward to it. Marvel and Disney Plus with Marvel has done really well at keeping my trust for their shows. Even the ones that I haven't been as fond of, I've still enjoyed. And I look forward to maybe this revised version of The Defenders, because honestly, as much as I love the Netflix stuff, some of it was a little too gritty for me. And I think you could still tell the same sort of story and dial it back. So,
I mean, I
unpopular opinion.
I don't feel like, I never felt that it was too gritty, but I definitely felt that sometimes the violence went to like true gratuitous levels, where like it wasn't that it was gritty, it was that the violence was so over the top gratuitous that I was taken out of the experience and I was just focusing on how gratuitous it was, and that to me was a downside.
That was upsetting to me. I mean, it's the same reason I don't watch Saw.
We have something that's going to disturb all of you listeners in just a minute, after we take a quick break. Okay, let's do another peek behind the curtain real quick, Ariel.
Yes, okay.
Okay, like, so...
I'm looking. What am I seeing?
We were brainstorming what two properties we're going to mash together. And part of the problem was that some of the things that were in the news were properties that we had recently mashed up with other stuff. And we don't take properties off the list once we use them, but we don't want to reuse them too frequently, right? Or too close together.
Yeah.
So do you know why I picked the two properties that I picked?
I don't.
Okay. So first of all, the two properties we picked were West Side Story and Dune. I said I picked because I pitched it, but
he pitched it. He came up with it. It's all his fault.
Yes. So the reason why I picked that is because the Set Decorators Society of America nominated Dune and West Side Story for awards. So they're technically in the news right now.
I mean, West Side Story is also in the news because the woman who played Anita won, was it a Golden Globe?
No, did she? That's fantastic. I have stopped paying attention to awards for the most part. This was just one of those headlines that I happened to see.
So I don't know if that's the correct award, but I do know it's the same award that Rita Moreno won for playing that role.
Oh, fantastic.
And so that kind of made news because it was kind of a historic sort of a happening. I haven't watched... It turns out I've listened to the music for West Side Story, but I've never watched.
So I've seen the original film adaptation of West Side Story. I've never seen a theatrical, like a stage theater production. I've never seen a production. Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen the new Steven Spielberg produced movie. However, we do need to explain what West Side Story is for people who aren't familiar.
It's Romeo and Juliet.
It is Romeo and Juliet. I mean, it's not even essentially. It is Romeo and Juliet, but it's set in New York. And you have some New Yorkers, some like native New Yorkers, and some immigrants from Puerto Rico. And those are your two, like those are your Capulets and Montagues, right? It's not, those are your two
families.
Except
they're called Sharks and Jets.
Yeah, the Sharks and the Jets. The Jets being the native New Yorker gang and the Sharks being the Puerto Rican gang. And you have the story of Maria and Tony. And they're forbidden love, and you know it's a musical. They have big musical numbers, but it tells the story.
Some of them are good.
Some of them are great. Stephen Sondheim worked on them, although he was not super happy with that assignment because he felt that he was really it wasn't his project. He was working on someone else's project, and he didn't have full freedom on it. And he felt that the push was to make the language in the songs too poetic. And he felt that that was not realistic considering the characters that were singing these songs. He's like, these shouldn't be poetic songs, but he lost the battle on that one. Anyway, some of the songs are fantastic. Apparently some of them are just okay. And some of them, I guess, Ariel thinks are bad. I don't know about the modern versions because I haven't listened to them, but I'm thinking about like the classic stage version and the original mm-hmm. film. And then obviously we got to talk about Dune, Frank Herbert novel.
Which is just basically Romeo and Juliet, but with a lot more gangs.
And sandworms.
And what? And sandworms, yeah. Yes.
No, so Dune's a big adventure science fiction tale. Do you want to take a stab at giving kind of an explanation of what Dune is?
Yes. So the universe, the galaxy is ruled by like an emperor, and there are all of these different like ruling houses, like the Harkonnens, the Atreides, things like that. And they all trade out power. And there is one like really important planet. I'm sure there are other important planets, but then like the main important planet when you jump into Dune is Arrakis, which is really the home to a group of people called the Fremen. And as Jonathan said earlier, the sandworms, and they produce a thing called spice, which has a whole bunch of like crazy properties. And I think enables space travel.
Yes, they feed it to their navigators, which allows the navigators to essentially allows them to see into the future so that they can avoid stars and stuff. It's what allows interstellar navigation without worrying about colliding with something at like light speed.
Yeah. And so the main character is Paul Atreides, the first main character, I'd say. And his family takes control of Arrakis, this main important planet, from the previous rulers, the Harkonnens. And then it's like this big subterfuge battle. They get like ambushed and most of them get killed.
Yeah.
And Paul Atreides and his mother get sent into the desert and get kind of rescued and taken by Fremen. And then it's just like this huge galactic political intrigue thing that happens over the span of many, many books. There's a lot of really cool concepts and type of like character classes, I would say, in the books that don't necessarily get covered in the main or explained or shown a whole lot in like the new movie, like Mentats, which have like these incredible mathematical powers.
They're supposed to be super logical and great tacticians.
Yeah. Yeah. So like worth reading the books, even if you watched the movie and you didn't necessarily like it because it was slow and you didn't understand much.
So those are our two properties. Ariel, do you want to go first? I understand yours is right to the point.
Mine is real, real small, real, real short, and real, real dumb. And it's called West Side Spicy. And it's not because it's a spicy story. So, but anyhow, New York was in a drought, and a street gang known as the Sharkonnens controlled the water supply. And the Arrakjets, a rival street gang who dealt in spices, didn't like that. You see, the spices were in fact spicy, and with the Sharkonnens bogarting all the water, their spice sales were down, just how the Sharkonnens planned it. This is like super loosely based on anything. The two sides were constantly on each other's turf and starting street skirmishes. Then one day, a new family moved to town, right around the time of the high school spring fling, and took over the Sharkonnens. The new family had a son named Paul Tony, like, you know, like you do. He went to the spring fling because his parents told him it would be good for him. And that's where he met a girl named Chania.
I just met a girl named Chania.
Only problem is, the girl was a part of the Arrakjets. Being teenagers, though, they didn't care and they fell in love. Chania would sneak Paul Tony spice, and Paul Tony would sneak Chania water. And they would sneak around to see each other. Only one other person knew, and that was Benita Jesseret. But she promised to keep it a secret because, you know, young love. Then one day, the families caught wind of what Paul Tony and Chania were doing. They tracked them down to find them all spicing and hydrating around together, and the turf war was escalated. Both sides pulled out weapons and immediately realized they had escalated things too high, but they couldn't back down, so they started puffing and stomping and snapping and dancing around, trying to intimidate the other side away instead of the bloodshed that was about to happen, while still saving face. It was a huge ruckus. Walls shook, streets echoed, and spice and water flowed into the New York sewer system. And that's when they felt it. An earthquake. Or so they thought. And then the ground split open and a giant mutant snake worm who had been hiding and growing in the sewer subway system emerged from the ground, called by the spice that had just entered its domain. As it rose up out of the ground, it devoured everything above it, including all of the Sharkonnens and the Arakshets, before disappearing once more into the underground tunnels. When the dust cleared, Paul, Tony, and Chania were the only ones left. They hightailed it away from the scene of the crime before the cops arrived, and then hightailed it away from the city to start a new life in Nevada, where they got married. Chania was partial to deserts, and so they lived happily ever after. The end.
You gave Romeo and Juliet a happy ending, where everybody except Romeo and Juliet dies.
I wanted to be kind of original, and also, like, if you look at Romeo and Juliet and then you look at West Side Story, the ends are, like, slightly different.
That's true.
Yeah.
You can tell that we don't share these with each other before we record, because Sharkonnen took me by such surprise. And my first reaction was, that's brilliant. And my second reaction was, I can't believe I missed that joke. I can't believe it.
It was real hard because, like, the Harkonnens are, like, the super creepy family. And the love story is between Paul Atreides and Chani Fremen.
Yeah, no, I
don't even know if that's their last name. So it was real hard to make it fit, but I couldn't pass it up.
As we'll see when we get to mine, I had a similar issue, because who do you make the antagonist when you're trying to force this story? However, before we get to that, this episode's going to run long, so we're going to take a quick break. Okay.
I thought for sure we were going to make it, yeah, Jonathan.
I thought so. Before the episode started, you told me your mashup was two paragraphs, and that felt like, if that was two paragraphs, those were long paragraphs.
It was, they're like this big. They're like, yeah,
thanks,
2 inches
great
long.
Great for an audio podcast. They were big.
They're like 2 inches long each in like 11.5 Arial on Google Docs.
Okay.
Yes, that's where I read all my mashups.
I felt there was some extemporaneous additions in there too.
Not many. It was 58 It's 58 pages of mashups, people.
Wow. So okay. You just keep adding them to the same document?
Yes.
Oh, I make a new document for every single one. And this one, my friends, is called West Spice Story. And before I jump into it, there's going to be references to stuff in Dune that's going to make no sense if you don't know what Dune is, like Bene Gesserits and things like that. But you're just going to have to roll with it, because I'm not going to explain it.
They're intrigue nuns.
Yes, they are intrigue
Magical
nuns.
Magical intrigue nuns.
Magical intrigue nuns. Imagine Littlefinger from Game of Thrones if he were a nun. Okay.
Okay.
Here we go. Paul Atreides has a problem. His father, the Duke, expects Paul to handle the responsibilities of being a Duke. His mother, Jessica, has secretly trained Paul in the ways of the Bene Gesserit, and both of them don't like his new girlfriend, Chani, one of the Fremen of the desert world of Arrakis. And then there's that dang Baron Harkonnen to deal with. Paul spends his days with a few other young men originally from Caladan. That's where his father ruled before their lives were overturned and they got sent to Arrakis. And this gang, including Paul's close friend Duncan Idaho, which for the purposes of this mashup is more like Paul's age, like to go around snapping their fingers, dancing, and singing. And Paul starts it off. When you're a duke, you're bound to go far, from your first dose of spice to your last ganja bar. When you're a duke, it's a job that's long-term, as you dodge enemies and sometimes a sandworm. You're who's in charge, no matter how it's faring. Elite Arrakis, and leave Caladan to the Baron, and we ain't caring. Here comes the Duke like a man who's on fire. He's bound to become the Bene Gesserit Messiah. Here comes the Duke and his girlfriend is fine. She'd make a great wife or at least concubine. The Duke is in charge of our entire nation. Fears the little death that brings obliteration. I need a vacation. And then the song ends because I can't. I seriously, I just can't go any longer than that. Anyway, after the introduction, we see that Paul really wants to sneak off to see his girlfriend, Chani, but the Fremen object to House Atreides, and House Atreides objects to the Fremen, and the Bene Gesserit sure as heck fire object to the Fremen, but then they also object to Paul, because he was never supposed to happen, but Paul's mom, Jessica, she totally let the cat out of the bag years ago, and now we're all stuck here, I guess. Anyway, just as Paul is about to sneak off to see Chani, he runs into someone who has other plans. And that someone is, of course, Thafir Hawat, the master assassin, who wants to train Paul in tactics. So Thafir tells Paul he ain't going nowhere, which just prompts another song. Thafir Hawat, I'm really upset. I never get the free time that I do gotta get. I ain't no tactician, I'm just a young teen, and I'm tired of you being mean, being mean, being mean, being mean, being so darn mean. I am tired of you being mean. I study every weapon that you put in my hand. I know the pointy bit's supposed to go in the other man. I know the really fast bullets will bounce right off my shield. How can I see the girlfriend that I've concealed? I've concealed, I've concealed, I've completely sealed. Yes, I have a girlfriend I've concealed. And then he realizes he's just confessed in song, which is a rookie mistake. That evening, it's another night with the pain box. That's what his father Leto calls television. Paul is able to withstand it, but only barely. And late at night, when the house is quiet, he stealthily makes his way out of the house, using all the tricks he has learned from his various mentors to sneak out into the wastes of Arrakis. There, after traveling for more than an hour, he makes his way to a secret spot, the spot where Chani meets with him so that the two might make goo-goo eyes at each other. And he sees Chani approach, and she smiles at him. And then, of course, they sing. Tonight, tonight, the sandworms all take flight, but only as metaphors in our song. Tonight, tonight, 'cause the worms aren't very light. No, they're big, and they're mean, and they're long. Those worms, they'll eat you in a minute if you are standing near them and don't dodge to the right. But here we are, and our fear of sandworms seems so far tonight. And anyway, that's when Baron Harkonnen attacks. And the Baron, well, you know, he's played by one of those stage actors who always gets cast in musicals, but in a non-musical role. You know, the actor who usually plays a supporting part, or maybe they're the villain. And it's not that they can't sing or dance. It's just that they never get the chance to. And maybe that eats on them, you know? Maybe that's the kind of thing that drives a person to become a villain when that person gets cast in every musical in high school, but never gets a singing part, right, Mrs. Thompson? Maybe that's the kind of thing that drives a person to, I don't know, become a professional podcaster and record ads about Casper mattresses. Ever think about that, Mrs. Thompson? Of course not. You're too busy casting me as Captain Brackett, who doesn't even show up in any ensemble musical numbers in South Pacific. Thanks a lot. Anyway, the Baron attacks, and it's like awful. And it turns out the Atreides doctor totes sold them out, even though he was supposed to be mentally conditioned to not be able to do that. Whoopsie. And so Paul's entire family gets wiped out. So this sets up, naturally, a big dance where Paul, the few surviving members of House Atreides, the Fremen, and the Harkonnens are all going to be at the same dance for different reasons. And that's when we get the Mambo of Death, which goes like this. Dun 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 dun. Mambo. Pew pew lasers. And then there's this quiet bit after some of the fighting where we get Paul and Chani and they sing, there's melange for us somewhere, melange for us, spice for me and spice for you. We're tripping hard from this spicy goo. Melange. And then the fighting looks like it's going to start again, but our movie has been pretty long so far, so it kind of just ends, and there's going to be another one, probably. But you're going to have to wait a couple of years. The end.
I loved it. Also, apparently, so did Walter, my other cat, because he was rubbing up against the microphone during all that.
That one was very fun for me to do. I have never been in West Side Story, so that's the closest I'm ever going to get.
Listen, I also have been cast in many musical roles that had less singing than I cared for.
Yeah, that was that. Okay. So I sometimes put in some autobiographical rants in my mashups, I admit. But to be fair, first of all, I didn't have a Mrs. Thompson as a drama teacher.
I was about to say, way to put her on blast.
No, I did not. I did not do that. And second of all, I actually was in several musicals where I had at least a small singing role. Like I was the rabbi in Fiddler on the Roof, and he sings a little bit. Mostly like
you were the pirate captain in Romeo and Ethel, the pirate.
That's not a high school play, but yes, I did Mazur Tov as the rabbi. I played the dad at McAfee in Bye Bye Birdie, and he has two songs. So, which just shows you that my high school was really hard up to get male students to audition, because if they have to cast me in a singing role, things have gone south pretty quickly.
I think you are a perfectly fine singer, Jonathan.
I'm very hoarse today because this is the third show I've recorded. So even when I'm in good voice, it's not great. And I'm not in good voice tonight.
I really feel like at some point we should, the next time there's like musical news, we should write some parodies. Like that should be our thing.
Okay.
Instead of a mashup, we should just write parodies.
I'm clearly not above it. So... But yes, that was my goofy attempt at creating a Dune West Side Story mashup. And Ariel, I loved yours. And and we invite you, the audience, if you have ideas for mashups, either you want to submit one of your own, like you wanted to show us what you can do mashing up a couple of properties, let us know. Or if you have suggestions for different ones that we should mash up together. Because some weeks are like this, where there aren't obvious candidates, right? Like if we had mashed up Moon Knight with something, first of all, I would have had to do a ton of research on Moon Knight because I don't really know that much about him. So yeah. But yes, feel free to reach out, and you can do that in numerous ways. One way is to send us an email. We've received a couple recently, which is great.
Yeah.
Keep them coming.
We love them.
And our
and all of your suggestions we have on our spreadsheet to do.
That's true. We do. And we will gladly add to it. Keep in mind again, just as a reminder, if you're going to suggest a mashup pairing, make sure they're not too similar already, because the more similar they are, the less there is to do, right? There's not as many doofy choices to make. But yes, you can write us. The address for the show is lnc@iheartmedia.com.
Yes, you can also contact us on social media. Just to say hi or to give us your thoughts. On Instagram and Facebook, we are Large Neutron Collider. And on Twitter, we are LNC_podcast. I check those. Make sure to like tag us, because if you just put something and you don't, I may not see it. But then I will share it with Jonathan and we will both be very happy.
Yes. Yes. I like to be reminded that there is a world outside it's not my apartment. I was going to make another musical reference because that's an Avenue Q song. But I like to be reminded that there's a world outside of my own little existence, because I don't do social media anymore, except occasionally Twitter. That's about it.
Of your own little corner in your own little room?
Yeah, that's pretty much where I stay all the time now.
Be
so
whatever you want to be.
Yeah. But this was a lot of fun. As always, I greatly appreciate my wonderful co-host, Ariel. Thank you.
I greatly appreciate you too, Jonathan. Thank you.
And until next time, I have been Jonathan Atreides Strickland.
And I have been Ariel. I feel pretty casted. Rah.
The Large Neutron Collider is a production of iHeartRadio and was created by Ariel Kasten. Jonathan Strickland is the executive producer. The show is produced, edited, and published by Tari Harrison. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.